Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
And the truth that is rooted within me.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the show. It's a delight to be here. And actually, Jeannie is not with me today, although she may call into the show. We've arrived in Bristol, Tennessee, which is where Jeannie's home was originally, and she's actually over helping her son, who's moving out of the house that that he's lived in since he got married, about a year and a half ago, into her condo here in Bristol. So she's over doing that, and I'm here doing the show, and it's a delight to have you. Carol, do we have anybody on the line?
Hi, Michael. No, we don't, not at this moment. If anyone would like to call in, they could call in at 646-200-4169 and ask you lots and lots of questions.
Fabulous. Have we got Tim or David yet?
There's someone here, but they haven't put a hand up. Let me
Your
see who it is.
Number?
Yes, 417. There they go. 417, who is this?
This is David, Carol. Jeannie normally sees and recognizes the number, so that's what was going on. So I'll remember to press the 1.
Yeah, well, sometimes there's several of you just from 417, so I don't know all the number, the whole number yet.
Good. Well, it is I, and I'm doing well, and hope all is well for everyone else. Good to hear your voice, Carol. Haven't talked with you in a while.
It has been. It's nice to hear your voice as well. So, wonderful.
Thank you for being on the switchboard for us.
Oh, no problem. It's always fun to hear you and Michael speak about the forgiveness. So, always learn more and more each day.
Great. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, got some fun things lined up. I'm surprised that Tim isn't there. I hope he's going to be on the show. Is he in the chat room by chance?
Let's see. Maybe this is him at 423. Is this Tim at 423?
No, that's Jeannie. Hey, sweetie.
That's Jeannie. Okay. Well, we got Jeannie here. What's his area code? Do you know?
I think it might be 815.
No, we don't have him yet. He's not here yet.
And I apologize, I can't stay on. I've only got one bar on my battery. And my son's cell phone's already dead, and we are moving, and so this is our only mode of connection while we're moving stuff around. I just wanted to call in and say I'm thinking about you, and thank you, Carol, for filling in today. And
you're welcome. And yeah, I think we have Tim too here too. Well, have fun, Jeannie, moving. That's always fun.
All right. Thank you. Love y'all.
I think this thing about the cell phone not being charged is genetic. There's a thing there.
I think it is too.
Anyway, I think we've got that.
You would know, wouldn't you, Michael? Just a habit.
I think she caught it from Ryan. Anyway. You have fun. We love you.
Love you too.
Alrighty.
Love you. Bye. I think we have Tim on the line too. Area code 815.
That's me.
Well,
I'm glad. Okay, we have everyone here.
Awesome. So today is day 31 of our celebration of Memorial Day. Carol, I'm not sure if you've been tapped into that, but on Memorial Day we decided that we would begin a tradition every day of inviting everyone to really, truly continue a true celebration of Memorial Day, not one where, you know, you go out and get drunk and have a party and have a day off work, but rather honoring those who have been forced to murder in war, to be murdered, to be maimed, to be injured, to be emotionally traumatized, and those who have experienced those traumas being brought home to them. And the amount of trauma that's happening in our culture is just unbelievable over this thing called war. David had some statistics that he shared with us a week or so ago that in the active military, there are approximately 20 people per month who are, was it per month, David?
Per day.
Per day, 20 people per day. Per day committing suicide in the active military, and about three quarters of vets don't check in or don't have anything to do with the VA, and those numbers are about 16 per day in this country. Most people who go out there and go, rah, rah, let's go make war on somebody, hey, what a fun thing to do, don't have a clue the cost that's involved. The money, I think we're scammed on that one in terms of what they tell us it costs. I think there's so much covered up, it's not funny. It's a big business. There's a fortune to be made in it. But the human cost is just unfathomable. And you think about 36 and that number 16, we probably could multiply by about 4. So somewhere between, 40 and 80 people a day committing suicide. That's part of the cost of war, folks. And so our request is that we eradicate war. And how are we going to do that? We're not going to do it by telling people to stop. We're going to do it by taking responsibility for our own hostilities and fears and moving through that war, moving through the hostilities and fears in us. Our offering is that the root of war is the hostility and fear that each of us carry around inside of us unresolved, and that we move that energy and the thoughts based on that energy throughout our whole family system without even being aware of it. And so we invite each of you that's listening to just pick one issue today that you're willing to face and that you're willing to forgive. Now, forgive doesn't mean if you're pointing your hostility at somebody else that you forgive them. We've been sold a Trojan horse to keep us insane, to keep us at war, to keep us in an incoherent state, to quote what we're going to talk about in a few minutes. And the bill of goods we've been sold is that hostility and fear is the only way to make it in the real world. And it is the only way to make sure that your life and the lives around you are destroyed, and that we perpetuate this game of war. And so the request we have today is that you pick one issue that you're willing to go inside yourself and deal with and remove. The process for doing that is called forgiveness. In the ancient Aramaic, it has nothing to do with letting others off the hook because of what's inside of you. It is literally how you go inside yourself and remove your errors and thought. And so if you're not familiar with that process, we invite you to go to our website. My book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, describes the whole process. You're certainly welcome to download that free from the website in English, German, Russian, Spanish. It can be in Farsi. It can also be ordered in Swedish. The Swedish publisher would not allow us to put it on the website free, so it's not there, but you can order the book in Spanish, or Swedish, pardon me. And or you can go to the right side of the page and click a link that says Download Worksheets. And the first three items have to do with the worksheet process. There's an explanation, first link. Second link is the actual worksheet. Here's how you forgive in the Aramaic sense. And the third one is a link to one of our radio shows from back in February with a young lady named Pam Gregory, who we walked through a worksheet. And so you've got the instructions for going through the whole process. So this is day 31 of our celebration of Memorial Day, and I honor those who have gone before us in that insanity called war, and we're hoping and holding the space to bring correction so that we can eradicate that, so that every child comes up in a world with a parent that's truly connected to love and is truly there for them, both parents that they are not forced to go off and participate in this insanity that humans have come to think is just a part of the game of life. So, Carol, do we have any other callers or any questions in the chat room, comments in the chat room?
Not yet. People are just calling, they're listening, and just seeing what they can learn. Nothing
cool.
yet.
Fabulous.
So if anybody wants to call in, they can call in at 646-200-4169. And if you have a question, press number 1 so I know that you are wanting to speak with Michael, David, and Tim.
Awesome. So, Tim, David, do you guys have anything on your minds today?
You know, this is David. I have this something I like to read. When you talk about the change the meaning of the word, change the language, you change the culture. So I received a letter from the Veterans Affairs on some tests when I went to see the medical doctor the other day. And it says, I'm reporting you to you the latest lab results on your recent visit to the VA outpatient clinic. The additional lab tests we back ordered, your analysis, CSBCI, as well as the EKG, were all unremarkable. And I thought, unremarkable? I will place the, and then he goes on to say that he's going to consult with this other doctor. And I thought, now what is unremarkable supposed to mean to me? Is this, and it, to me, what this implies is that there's no accountability or responsibility or giving, okay, this is what it is. There's nothing there. So I thought I would put that out there and see if there was some other feedback from some folks and to be aware of, and that's my, this is my interpretation of it. So I wanted to get some feedback, see what people thought about that.
Yeah, and in medical circles, the word unremarkable means normal, basically. Nothing needs to be done here. Everything looks good. That's the definition.
Yeah, I understand that that's what it is. And why would that, I mean, why not just put it in there then to make a statement that it's normal? That
yeah.
Or if it was abnormal, they would. To me, that's one of those words or a way of even categorizing it without taking a stand. And, you know, I hear what you're saying, Michael. I figured that that's what it was. And I wonder who came up with that and for what reason? Why not? Is it normal? Or is it abnormal, rather than it's unremarkable?
Yeah,
it's like,
and if
I'm remarkable, and now I'm unremarkable. Anyway.
If one says normal, David, then they'd be accountable for if tomorrow something weird happened, you know, then they'd be on the hook for, well, you said it was normal. So it is a way of being noncommittal. I would suspect it certainly fits in that category.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I guess.
Tim, do you have any thoughts for us this morning?
Well, I've been going through some shifting and changing lately. I had my back go out on Friday, or it's kind of a hip thing that affects my whole ability to stand up straight. And so I worked through it over the weekend, and I went to the chiropractor on Monday, and he helped me stand a little straighter. But today I have my weekly meeting with a person who does energy work with me. And I couldn't wait to get to that because the last time this hip went out and stayed stuck out and the chiropractor wasn't able to fix it right away, there was a huge emotional component to it.
Right.
And this time, once again, the huge emotional component was revealed and right there as the release happens, just like when I do a worksheet and find the issue and have an aha moment, I feel that energy release. And I thought I would just mention it today because it has to do with someone who came back into my life on Friday. And this is an old patient that I haven't seen for 7 or 8 years. And I've done so much work in a different area with your work, Michael, and other practical spiritual tools and Yeshua's readings, etc., that the crux of my hip going out was a fear, a stored emotion of fear, that I wouldn't be able to maintain my course on my spiritual path and still be able to help this person.
Hmm.
And this went back to an earlier time when I was 10 years old, and I had this dilemma with friends. I was much more interested in introspection and thinking about issues of love and compassion. And my 10-year-old friends, all they wanted to do was, you know, play Cowboys and Indians and war and baseball. And I had that disconnect that you often talk about, where I gave up my connection to my awareness of my source as love in order to feel that I was still connected with all of these other friends. And I had a series of releases I had to do today, and tears and sadness about those choices when I was 3, when I was 10, when I was, you know, what am I now? I'm going to be 57. And I have a fear that I can't keep pursuing what I know is dearest to my heart, that spiritual work, that awareness of my spiritual nature, and still be able to relate to people in the physical plane.
Mm-hmm.
So much sadness, many tears, great release, and I can stand straighter.
Good. But there's still some remnant there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was... I spent the last hour prior to getting on the phone with you breathing on the floor, breathing and resting, and letting the energy flow. And so I'm sure there will be more worksheets and more delving into that dilemma, that fear that if I stay true to myself and my nature is love, that I will grow unknowable to people around
me. Tim?
Yes.
Yeah, when you started with that, when you mentioned the hip with it, then I was the brain cells that fired in me was I worked on that on my hip several years ago, and Louise Hay and her metaphysical interpretation of the different parts of the body is that the hip is about moving forward. And her affirmation, one of the affirmations that she recommended for that was to go hip, hip, hooray, I'm moving forward. And it sounded, just my interpretation of listening to what you were saying, it was like you're moving forward and then there was something there that resonated to bring something up to kind of hold you, in the, you know, to hold that space. And I support you and continue doing what it is that you're doing and moving forward and celebrate it.
Thank you, sir. I'll look
You're
into
welcome.
That.
Cool. And there's, you know, you mentioned the component that's that involves the back, and there's a physician you can look up online. He's actually an MD, formerly a surgeon who did primarily back surgery, with the typical results, I believe, are around somewhere around 5% success. And this man now runs a 90-plus percent success, and he hasn't touched his scalpel in, gee, I don't know how long time. It's been a while since I've tapped into his work. But his name's Sarno, S-A-R-N-O. His 90% success rate with back problems is, and his definition for back pain is that it's unconscious rage. And so while you've tapped into the sadness part of it, perhaps there's a rage component yet. Perhaps there's some anger at, you know, not being supported, because also the hip, you know, the whole lower part of the body is oftentimes about support. So you might look at whether there's, you know, some anger at not being supported and not being assisted in moving forward and not being recognized for who you are as a spiritual being while the world is busy. And this whole conversation just taps right into where I was planning to go with the show today. I had an exciting breakthrough for me last night, this morning actually, that I want to share. But so it might be worth just asking Rooka to show you if there's any rage in there about those childhood events and then if there's some, that's what's resonating with this friend coming back into your life. And so I join you in asking if that's a component of this and being assisted in healing it. And then you'd probably just stand up from the phone and stand up as straight as a die and walk around and be totally, completely, 100% pain-free.
Well, I'm making notes. I will look into that.
Let's have a miracle right here on the show. Just go inside and ask and see what happens. I found myself, since I got in touch with that work from Sarno and I asked that question, I find that if I get a twinge in my back, it disappears very quickly when I say, okay, Ruka, I realize I maybe have some unconscious rage here. What do I need to deal with? What do I need to breathe through? What do I need to forgive? And bingo. I usually forget it ever happened. So that would be my vote for you, that would move and heal, and that will take you to back to reconnecting to the wisdom of that three-year-old, the real true mind of the three-year-old that the world was battering into compliance and battering it, you know, basically, you know, it ties back in from what I hear you saying, Tim, right back to the codependence work at that moment where the world forced us and we bought in to give up our essential nature, love, to give up the direct experience of our true being. And this may be the last vestiges of that one to go through to really totally reclaim your true being. But the world basically beats us into submission. And, you know, the part of the idea of the Colosseum, where you go back to Rome and the Colosseum, where they had these people raging and raving over, you know, more blood. And, of course, we have the Colosseum today. We call it a little more civilized. But, you know, you look at how much money people spend to go and get drunk and eat hot dogs and watch somebody pound the hell out of somebody else over a little piece of pigskin. And we have something that keeps people in a chemical state of dissociation and a thought system of competition and dissociation that tends to destroy being. And that thought system just reproduces itself. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. As though that were its purpose.
Well, in doing what you just suggested and while you were talking and asking and going inside, I was tapped into another connection here. The rage may be there, and it may be the rage that covers the sadness, but there's this deep sadness that the at least the perceived choice was there for me at a younger age to either stay in that space of love or stay connected to the people around me.
Well, and this, give it up.
This trigger for this work was a patient returning after many years, and she was someone I worked with who had one of the more horrendous childhood you could imagine for physical and sexual violence, and that resonates, that it taps into that sadness, that there is that we do to ourselves and each other, that is so much the opposite of that loving connection. And so it's the sadness right now that's there.
Yeah. Go on all the way in. You've got my support. Hold it. Go on in and feel it. About 8 years ago, I made a trip out west, and I went into a major healing crisis and was down for several days. And the people that I was staying with had traveled with someone else to their home, and I had a rental car. I was going under the car, so everybody was pretty much locked in the house. And after about 6 days of this, I was up and, you know, getting on the other side of my head. Like my lungs had always been a problem in my life. And I'd gone out that morning to sit with these folks, and they were watching a video of a woman who had been horribly scarred as a child and a fire that the kids had all started a bonfire, and her brother decided that he was going to throw gas on the fire to get it to really light up, and she was on the other side of the fire. The glass of gas splashed right through the fire and just really terribly disfigured her. And she was speaking about her recovery as an adult from the abuse that she'd taken, and shared some stories about how one day she'd been at a mall and two teenagers come up to her and spit in her face and, you know, calling her a freak and, you know, just horrendous treatment, just exactly what you're talking about. And right after that, seeing as how I was the only one with a car, I drove, these folks need to get some groceries, I drove to the grocery store, and I really wasn't feeling up to going in, so I sat in the car, and I remember this deep wail that came from my being. And, you know, I've always been, since I started doing this work, I'm committed, I'm here, I'm going to go through whatever needs to happen in order to take this work through to all of humanity. But in that moment, as I was sitting in the car, this deep wail came up and just said, I want out of here. I want to go back to where humans treat each other like human beings instead of this insanity. And it was I hear you, and it resonates, that the level of pain where I came for the first time in all the years I've been doing this work, where I want out. I don't want to stay here anymore. This place is too insane.
So I'm just breathing.
Yeah, so I join you in that. I hear you loud and clear.
Michael, can I make a suggestion right now?
Go for it.
Maybe we should do like a little meditation of breathing right now for everyone, if you'd like.
Sure. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, so everybody can breathe and maybe breathe in what's ever coming up for them at this moment.
Yes. And ask that super processor, Rukka, to move whatever that's about on an energetic level. And particularly, Tim, we hold the space for you. And we'll just take a moment to be silent with that and let yourself, everybody, if you would, connect. And, you know, there's this wonderful African proverb that says, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Our purpose here is to go together. Create that space of support. And the truth is, we're all connected. We're all one. It's only our thoughts, our minds that keep us separated. When one of us suffers, we all suffer. But let's eradicate another chunk of the cause of war right now by each of us allowing whatever's coming up to breathe through. And if there are goals we hold for anybody outside of us, for instance, in that case I just shared, I'd be canceling the goal, and I'll do that again now. I did it back then. It's a major process for me, but I cancel the goal to have humans treat others like humans. And I ask that power to go inside and let loose any residual pain or energy that doesn't belong in my or anybody's physiology. That we remove this from the earth totally, completely, transmute it into the love of God. So Dr. Tim, I see you surrounded in light and in love, being honored for who you are as a human being and not a human doing. And the awesome space of love that you are for so many people and the gift you've given to so many people in doing that. I see that returning to you from all of those people as they surround you in light. Accept your true humanness, the presence of love that you are, and honor that and love to play with you. And perhaps that energy reaching back to those who would pound you into submission of, no, we're supposed to be human doings, we're supposed to be human warrings, we're supposed to be human gettings, we're supposed to be human controllings, all those non-human states. That energy of healing touches back and reaches to all of those, because it is time on planet Earth for the insanity that passes as a human life in our culture, those things of hostility and fear, that they be evaporated from the thought system of the earth. And I acknowledge your courage for coming forward and being one who's willing to face it and do it. Well, so few are willing to actually face what's going on inside of them. They'd rather rage, complain, whine, criticize, resent, whatever.
Well, thank you. That was quite effective.
We support you being able to go out dancing tonight, my friend.
Thank you.
And we cherish your being and support it.
Big releases.
Awesome.
Michael in the chat room, someone wrote that was very powerful. When we are in that space of love and having others holding that energy, amazing things can be released. I just released another ton doing this process.
Yeah. That's our job. That's what we're here for. Fabulous. Awesome. We're glad to be here supporting you. And we're glad to be supported by you, that you are here as that space assisting in what we're doing. It's amazing. So day 31.
That's Sam. That was Sam.
Oh, hey, Sam. So a major celebration of Memorial Day, of opening the space and evaporating a little more of the insanity, the insane thoughts and painful feelings that go along with insane thinking. Removing it, moving forward, really, truly honoring those who've been in war and been scarred by it, which, of course, includes all of us.
Someone else in the chat room wrote, don't forget to thank the higher force.
Oh, yes. There's Rooka. That's exactly it. There is a power in us. In Aramaic, it was called Rooka de Kutcha, that when we invite it into activity, he's delighted to go through and clean out whatever we're ready to move. And so gracious appreciation for that gift from the Creator. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we understand how to work with it is an awesome gift. So there's an old saying, Tim, that says, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And I like to offer that absence does not make the heart grow fonder. It just allows the stuff that we've hidden away around that relationship to dissipate, to go back to an unconscious state. And so rather than absence making the heart grow fonder, the truth is that it just allows the energy to dissipate and kind of disappear. And so I'm delighted for you that that's back up and you're conscious enough to bring it forward. And, of course, the corollary to absence makes the heart grow fonder is that idea of familiarity breeds contempt. And, of course, familiarity does not breed contempt. It just allows what we've been hiding to come to the surface. And so I'm delighted for you that that this came to the surface and offers you the opportunity to heal it, because that's what we're here for, is that healing process. So, very cool. And to you, Sam, thank you for being there. And I have some thoughts I'd like to share that came from some reading for me that I just did. And it ties in with the codependence work we did. And I just came across some awesome writing from a man named David Bohm. David is a physicist. And he just, and I say just, he did this decades ago, but I just came across his writing very recently. And it just, from a physicist's point of view, for those who aren't familiar with David Bohm, he worked closely with Einstein. He's considered one of the preeminent quantum physicists of all time. He was a giant in the fields of theoretical physics, philosophy, neuropsychology. He worked on, was an important contributor to the Manhattan Project back in World War II. He worked with Carl Pribram, a Stanford neuroscientist who's done awesome work, and he was part of developing what was called the holonomic model of the brain, and the theory that the brain operates in a similar manner to a hologram, and according to very precise quantum mathematical principles and characteristics of waveform patterns. And we want to tie this back to the codependence work, and David, the comment you had and your work, Tim, just ties perfectly into where I wanted to go, because I personally got a very exciting breakthrough after reading some of Bohm's work last night. And both of you have heard me say more than once, I'm sure, that when we talk about information firing in the body, in the energy field, the structure, that most people call it thinking. You know, and in the workshop I'll say, that, you know, don't think about the color of your car. And they'll say, what are you folks doing? And they'll say, well, I'm thinking about the color of my car. And I always offer back. So I set up a frequency with my voice. My voice resonated brain cells in you that represented the color of your car, and you call that thinking. And we call that function mind. I would offer that has nothing to do with the function of our minds, and it has nothing to do with thinking. But that's what we've been taught in our culture. And so I always throw out the tongue-in-cheek idea that if most people said what they thought, they'd be speechless, because we have not been trained to think. All we've been trained to do is to cycle information that's already in this carbon-based memory system. It's already in what we would call the body's mind. And so, based on some of Bohm's writing in my meditation this morning, what came forward was, I finally got something to a term that we can use rather than calling what the resonating of information in brain cells, rather than calling that thinking or calling that mind. What I got and realized is that we could start to term that as replicate thinking, that it just replicates whatever's going on in there. And so whatever's stored in carbon-based memory, when that thing starts to fire, it will replicate whatever's there. It will redo, it will remake, and continue whatever's happening on that level. And so the thing that stimulated that and brought that forward is a quote from Bohm. And here's what he says. I remember this is a physicist, and he's not only a theoretical physicist, but he's made major contributions in the field of neuropsychology. So here's what he says. He says, the generally accepted assumption in thought is that it's just telling you the way things are, and it's not doing anything, that you are inside there deciding what to do with the information. But you don't decide what to do with the information. Thought runs you. thought, however, gives the false information that you are running it, that you are the one who controls thought, whereas actually thought is the one which controls each one of us. Thought is creating divisions out of itself and then saying that those divisions are there naturally. This is another major feature of thought. Thought doesn't know it's doing something, and then it struggles against what it is doing. You know, I hear echoes of Paul saying, why is it the things I would do I cannot do, and the things I hate I do? So it's saying thought doesn't know what it's, that it's doing something, and then it struggles against what it's doing. It doesn't want to know that it's doing it. And thought struggles against the results, trying to avoid those unpleasant results while keeping on with that way of thinking. And what Bohm says, I call that sustained incoherence. You look at the sustained incoherence in our culture, it's called war, it's called strife, it's called fight, it's called go to the Colosseum and get all chemically excited over violence. And this sustained incoherence is what leads to the insanity of our culture. And whenever there's sustained incoherence, as Bohm calls it, in tissue, we end up with trauma in the tissue. I'll read a little more from him that where he talks about this is also the body. And so in our codependence work, you remember, if you go back to the initial workshops radio shows that we did around codependence, which is about probably 5 or 6 weeks ago now, they're in the archives. You can listen to them. But I use and in the DVD of codependence to interdependence, I use an analogy of an airplane propeller. You know, imagine we start the airplane propeller. We know that it's a pivot point with four arms spinning around it, but we bring a man from the jungles of South America who knows nothing about machines or anything complicated like that, that type of complexity, and we have him stand on the tarmac and look at the propeller, and he sees a shiny silver disc. That spinning propeller with light bouncing off of it causes something to resonate in his brain cell structure, and what resonates produces a picture. The picture, a shiny silver disc, in no way, shape, or form represents accurately the propeller, the actuality of the propeller. And so as he does behaviors based on it, if you go back into the ancient Aramaic language, you hear Yeshua saying, don't judge by appearances. So this propeller, this shiny silver disc is an appearance in this man's mind. And that appearance is totally, completely, 100% false. Everything that shows up in our minds as a result of what Bohm calls sustained incoherence is insane. It's an appearance. It doesn't fit. And if you take action on it, then you'll be in the same kind of trouble as the guy from the jungles who takes action on thinking that the propeller is a shiny silver disc. Imagine he reaches his hand out to see what the friction will feel like on his fingertips when he touches the shiny silver disc. It's a really serious problem by taking behavior or doing behavior based upon that appearance. If we do a behavior based upon a picture in our minds, and you notice that the thoughts, the source of the shiny silver disc is the firing of brain cells in this fellow's so-called mind, and I'm going to offer it's the replicant mind, not just the mind now. There is a real mind that comes from our true being. What Tim was talking about, he knew he wanted to hold on to as a kid, and they tried to force him to get out of it, that he knew he wanted to hold on to his real mind. He knew he wanted to hold to the direct experience of love. All of us did. And sooner or later, most of us succumb to the forces of the incoherent world and buy into its realities, its thoughts, and then we do it to ourselves. We do behaviors based upon incoherent states. What is a behavior based on an incoherent state? I would offer that the signal that you're in an incoherent state is any form of hostility or fear in your body. If there's any form of hostility or fear, that's an indicator that your mind is working with this incoherent state that Bohm produced or spoke about, wrote about. And so our thought now insane. Hostility and fear is a signal that our thought is insane and we're about to do insane behavior by the appearances produced by that thought. The guy who sees a shiny silver disc puts his fingers into the airplane propeller. So we have a signaling system when we're in an incoherent state. It's hostility and fear. Don't do a behavior from there. First of all, restore yourself to sanity. Restore yourself to a connected space of love. And so Baum goes on and says this. So one begins to wonder what's going to happen to the human race. Technology keeps on advancing with greater and greater power, either for good or for destruction. What is the source of this trouble? Baum says, I'm saying that the source is basically in thought. Now, many people would think that such a statement is crazy because thought is the one thing we have with which to solve our problems. And Baum, it would appear, now I'm going to order some of his books and do some more looking, but it would appear from this synopsis that Baum did not distinguish between actual thinking, which comes from a state of being, and the resonating of brain cells in the carbon-based memory system, which I'm going to call replicate thinking. So, you know, in not distinguishing that, he appears to think we're talking about the same thing. But I would offer that that thinking which produces solutions is actually from being. It isn't from carbon-based memory. But everything that comes from being is registered and stored in carbon-based memory. And if there are incoherencies in the carbon-based memory system, it just becomes part of that whole system. So, you know, he's saying, well, but here we are, they tell us, or this is how we solve our problems, but it isn't from the resonating of what's in the structure already. So he goes on, again, many people would think that such a statement is crazy because thought is the one thing we have with which to solve our problems. That's part of our tradition. Yet it looks as though the thing we use to solve our problems is the source of our problems. Thought, he goes on to say, has been constantly evolving, and we can't say when that structure began. But with the growth of civilization, it has developed a great deal. It was probably very simple thought before civilization, and now it has become very complex and ramified, and it is much more incoherent than before. Now, I say that this system has a fault in it, a systematic fault. It is not a fault here, there, or here, but it is a fault all throughout the system. He says, can you picture that? It is everywhere and nowhere. This system not only includes thoughts, felts, and feelings, but includes the state of the body. So when there's pain in the body, there's incoherent thought going on. There's something that's incoherent energetically in that part of the system, and it's happening in our minds. You go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he talks about those who love truth, who look into their errors in thought and the errors of their society, for they will be cured of mental stress. Baum is simply continuing the teachings that Yeshua had here, as I see it. And so this includes the state of the body. He says it includes the whole society. You may say, I see a problem here, so I will bring my thoughts to bear on this problem. But my thought is part of the system, and it has the same fault I'm trying to look at, or a similar fault. Thought is constantly creating problems that way, and then trying to solve them. But as it tries to solve them, it makes them worse because it doesn't notice that it's creating them. And the more it thinks, the more problems it creates. So if we're functioning out of what our culture would call thought, the resonating of brain cells from the past, all hostility and fear introduces an incoherence or is a signal of an incoherence, and that we're degenerating further and further into insanity. And so you'll remember I've said many times in the radio show, and I say it all the time in my workshops, in order to truly heal, you've got to be out of your mind. You've got to be out of this replicate mind, this thing that includes all these errors that are presumed truths in our culture that Bohm is acknowledging our incoherent thoughts. And, you know, Einstein ties in with this extremely well, too, because Einstein calls what in this work from now on I'm going to be calling the replicant mind. Einstein says speaks of the rational mind. And he comes closer to identifying the fact that we have two minds. We have one that comes from being, the soul's mind, and then we have one that is simply the playing out of whatever's going on in the body. So the replicant mind. So here's what Einstein says. The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. So our invitation in doing this work is to get back to another set of skills that do not hold the rational so-called mind, which I would call the replicant mind. All it can do is replicate. If you look into your past and you see problems there, your own personal past or the past of your parents' parents, their parents, their parents. I look back into my parents' past and I look at a mother who came from a pretty tough neighborhood, as my dad did. My dad's description of his upbringing was very much like if you've seen the movie The Streets of New York. He was in Aberdeen, Scotland, a pretty tough place to grow up. My mom was from an alcoholic family, just, you know, seeing all kinds of things. So you look at that as becoming part of this incoherent system, and these thoughts are passed to us generationally. And this is what Bohm's talking about. We have this insane hostility and fear-based thinking, and we want to count on it to solve our problems. And it is our problem. So Einstein says we have a sacred gift. It is the intuitive mind. That is the mind of the soul. That's the true mind. The other is just a cheap copy, and it's meant to be a servant. Yeshua, thousands of years ago, speaks about if you are the master bound by the servants in your own household, you're in trouble. We, as human beings, that life that, Tim, you spoke about, you wanted to hold on to as a kid, and everybody else wanted you to get rid of it and come play ball and come fight and do war games. Few hold to that sacred gift that Einstein talks about. And they buy into the rational mind, which is generational. It is a multi-generational database that can only replicate what's gone in the past. And our whole society is functioning out of that. Just take a look at the hostility and fear. You know, you look at the people who run our culture, who supposedly are our leaders. You know, there were some fellows who started a project where they went and asked political leaders, they asked every governor in the United States and they asked the whole of Congress, so a total of about, 585 people or so, if they would sign a decency declaration. I forget exactly the name of the project at this moment, but asked if they would sign a decency declaration, and after 2 years of trying, they gave up. Because they could only get, I believe it was, and it's been a while, but 3 or 4 people to sign that declaration. Our country's leaders, 585 of them or so, could only get 4 people to say that they would have decency in their dialogue with others in the political system. Incoherency is the rule of our culture. And we have to get enough people who will break through this incoherency, this feeling that if I don't like what's out there, somebody else won't kowtow to my infantile demands, then I go into this hostility and fear as my forebears did, and I think that's how I'm going to resolve things and turn back to the sacred gift of the intuitive mind that will always tell us how to heal whatever's going on in us. So that's our invitation today again, Memorial Day. I think we've done a major chunk of work right here with just those folks who are listening and opening a space. Critical mass is what we're heading for, to bring healing to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Any thoughts, Tim or David, on that whole piece? I think it's just an awesome piece from David Volman. We thank you for that, David. It's just
Michael.
Yes.
We have about 4 minutes left, and there's a caller that's wanting to ask a question.
Cool.
Would you like to take it?
Oh, okay. Come on in.
Okay, well, as soon as I get this switch, okay, the microphone open. Okay, well, it's just not, okay. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's not going to open here. Well, let me try this again. Okay, area code 417-209. Hi, are you there?
This is Sam. Oh, hey, Sam. Welcome, young lady. We can hear you loud and clear.
Good. I just wanted to tell the importance of the having willingness to do this work. The war games and what Tim just shared and the meditation just opened up a whole new opportunity for me. I came in here to listen to this, and I was just smiling, and all of a sudden this volcano erupted in my gut. And that's the power
awesome.
Of willingness and seeing what is available in the energy of other people holding that space. The space that everyone held enabled me to release so much, and I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Delighted.
I think the war games was a huge trigger. My brothers, I grew up with two older brothers who would fill garden hoses with lead pipes and go out hunting a certain racial group at night.
Wow.
That was the insanity I grew up with.
Yeah, that's pretty bizarre, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And that was called life.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
There's always a delay on my phone, and I apologize for that. I had that problem last time I called. I went to treatment years ago for depression. I was severely depressed back in the 80s, and a doctor asked me, do you think you came from a normal family? And I said, yeah, my family was really normal. And he leaned back in his chair and he laughed and he said, honey, your family was anything but normal.
Yeah.
But that's our belief system growing up. That was normal to me.
Yep. Yeah. And that incoherency, incoherent thought that Bohm speaks about actually has pretty much become the norm. In our culture, it's bizarre. I know even families that I've worked with over the years in the upper echelon where, you know, dad's a professional, mom's a professional or a homemaker, and, you know, the pillars of society. And then you start working with the children and you hear the terrors and the rages and the griefs that are totally incoherent. And we have to learn, I think, about Einstein's gift that he spoke about, this intuitive mind, and start to function out of that instead of the bringing to bear the incoherencies of 1,000 generations of insanity. And I acknowledge you, Sam, for being willing to face that and let that move and go through it and be one of the critical mass. You know, one of my early mentors used to say all it would take would be 8 people through the gate, 8 people who would remove what we're speaking about is that incoherency. And together we would create the best year yet of the eternal life of 7 billion people on the planet. And Sam, how about calling you in tomorrow? Let's chat a little more. We love you.
Okay, love you. Thank you. I made a strong commitment to you. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. We're down for just a few seconds, Michael.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, thank you,
Michael. Thank you all for being here. Have a blessed one. We love you.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every